On July 12th of 1607, on an island of stone and symbols, a wanted man, one escaping the clutches of Rome, steps foot, ready to wreak havoc. A man of medium stature, dark eyes, mid-length scruffy hair, goatee and always dressed in black. A man who carries his swords closer than a banker his keys. A lost lamb, hailing from the north of Italy, has found itself on the same rock infested with Knights of St. John. For now, this shall be the home of Michelangelo Merisi da Caravaggio. Powerful friends have brought him here, and now even greater ones shall lay down the canvas for the master. Fra Ippolito Malaspina, a hero of the great siege, warrior of the Battle of Lepanto, cousin of the great Admiral Giovanni Andrea Doria, and up till previously, the general of the Papal fleet, his great friends with the Grand Master Alof de Wignacourt. The mortar and the stone walls whisper possibilities that perhaps Malaspina himself orchestrated the Grand Master's rise to power. This makes him the perfect man to befriend, especially if you happen to be Caravaggio, traveling to Malta on the same ship as such nobility. This was the perfect opportunity. Yet Malaspina, who could have crossed paths with Merisi in Rome during the height of his career, is also bringing his nephew Alessandro Costa to be Wignacourt's page boy. Does Malaspina have time for Merisi? All he needs to do is put in a recommendation, and from there he would be eternally grateful. And though Caravaggio's reputation be stained mortally, artistically, it retains its splendor. The introduction is made, strings are pulled, and Merisi is now a free man once more. Whatever Malaspina did, it worked. And to repay such a generous deed, Saint Jerome in writing came into being. A gift to Malaspina, his coat of arms included, used to hang in the residence and later on, upon his death, would hang in the Italian chapel dedicated to Saint Catherine of Alexandria, where Malaspina would also be buried and thus requested for Saint Jerome to be hung in this chapel inside Saint John's Co-Cathedral. Interestingly enough, this was not his first depiction of the old man in writing. Yet, this one is a little more special than the one which hangs at Villa Borghese. Not for any out-of-the-ordinary feature like a rare signature, a self-portrait or a camouflaged courtesan. Apart from making headlines in 1607 upon its creation, this painting comes back to haunt the front pages in 1984. Surely, the mastermind was well under mounds of ash and dust, but another type of art would take place now, or more aptly put, a crime. What happened? On December 29th, 1984, a slow Saturday during those hazy days in between Christmas and New Year, the time where you are unsure if you should just take a day off or push through. Well, on this specific day on the Isles of Malta, a painting which once hung in a private knight's house in Valletta and later on moved to the Chapel of Italy inside our Vatican on steroids, St. John's Co-Cathedral, and finally shifted into another section inside the Cathedral Museum, would go missing. How? Well, this slow Saturday will soon change course. Four or maybe more men walk into St. John's Museum wearing workman clothes. Most of the guides were on break for the holidays. It's almost closing time too, and in addition to this, the staff at the cathedral ran particularly and peculiarly low on that day. Research has been done well. During this time of the year, things are usually quiet. Should we be worried? Apparently so. For the air is stagnant with thieves. One must always be on the lookout. Towards the end of June, a Valesco was stolen, and just now in September, a Preti was snatched. Could these be the same thieves? The men head up to where Saint Jerome was placed. Two stayed in the corridor and kept an eye on things. As for the other two, they placed a chain with a sign, "Work in progress," and true to their sign, they started their work. As they lowered the heavy frame containing the masterpiece, a German tourist approaches the lookouts, asking them if it is possible to peek at the Caravaggio. But unfortunately, the area was closed. The frame now hangs on the ground. A sharp blade is taken out and carefully, the canvas is divorced from the frame. The bandits roll up the painting, head over to one of the tapestries, and as they move it, a window is revealed. The old Caravaggio is lowered, or perhaps even thrown into the streets, where the last member was to pick it up and mold into the audience. Just like that, one of only two Caravaggios remaining in Malta became one. The famed personal favorite of Malaspina has been stolen. Caravaggio has been snatched. Friends, Romans, countrymen, welcome back to another episode here on Campus 103.7 with your host Jeremy Gregg for yet another episode of Caro Caravaggio. This time we are on episode 11 and you must be wondering why did we mix things up? Wasn't it supposed to be chronological and all of this jazz? Well, obviously we don't really know all the time when the paintings would have been executed. So the reason why I wanted to, let's say, swap things around was also to add more dynamic to the story, and it was a personal choice. Just also to give you a bit of intel, I also work as a tourist guide, and every time we go into St. John's Co-Cathedral, the usual sequence as to how we do our narration and our interpretation is we start over with the beheading and then we go down to St. Jerome. So from my perspective, I'm going to be offering a little bit more of a personal view upon this painting, and I am super excited to introduce Saint Jerome in writing, an oil on canvas which was produced for none other than Fra Ippolito Malaspina, who we will get to very, very soon. Today is going to be a rather dramatic episode, however, not as dramatic as the next one, my dear friends. Get ready and buckle up for that one. Yet still, let us get to it, because today, with Michelangelo, things, as I mentioned, are going to get very, very personal. Reach out, touch faith. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back for another episode on Campus 103.7 with your host, Jeremy Gregg, for the series Caro Caravaggio. Today, we are going to be discussing none other than Saint Jerome in Writing, a painting which is found in the local collection inside Saint John's Cathedral, just one floor underneath the beheading of Saint John the Baptist. There it is, with a lot of security, because obviously, as you heard in the introduction, this painting was one robbed, unfortunately, which made for a rather epic and very interesting story. I believe a film is also coming out very, very soon. However, let us get to this. Now, this piece of work was executed as a gift, as a thank you to Fra Ippolito Malaspina, the bailiff of Naples, a man who was well in with the order, a man who was also the bailiff of Naples and had a lot of fancy titles. The hero of the great siege, a fighter in the Battle of Lepanto. The list keeps on getting bigger. However, what do we see in this painting? Starting off, the size of this oil on canvas stands at 117 centimeters in height and 157 centimeters in width. And what do we see over here? The main protagonist is none other than Saint Jerome. Saint Jerome takes center in this canvas. The background is as dark as it possibly can, and the light is as per usual from the top left-hand side, illuminating our main protagonist, Saint Jerome. Saint Jerome, in the center, he is an aged man. His body shows us the weight of time, but here he is far away from death. And how do we know this? What does Caravaggio tell us? If we look closely at his bare chest, as he does not have any clothes apart from his torso downwards, at this point you can see, illuminated and also in shade by the light, all of the creases inside his body. An aged man that is not ready to give up, despite having a grey beard, a receding hairline, and quite an exhausted appearance. Yet his eyes are determined. They are tilted downwards, and then we lead on to his hands. His left hand grasps the inkpot quite tightly and firmly, whilst with his right hand, as we can see, a flex of his tricep moving into his forearms with popping veins, he grabs a quill, and he translates. The determination is strong. If he is to finish this, he must act swiftly. But who is guiding him? God. But we'll get to that in a moment. At this point, Saint Jerome pushes so firmly upon this book that you can notice it starts to bend. And here it shows you the determination that one requires to get all of this done. He is, after all, translating the Bible. On the table, where we can also find the quill and the inkpot and the book, we have a couple of other items. If we shift over from the center of the painting towards the right-hand side, we can notice a stone, we can notice a skull, we can notice a cross and a brand new candle. Starting with the stone, meant for piety, for self-flagellation, perhaps sacrifice. We then turn to the skull. The skull is not facing towards Saint Jerome. This element of memento mori looks out into the viewer. A few teeth are missing, death and disease. Saint Jerome, at such an aged moment here, is not allowed to die, even though he might be close. The element of death looms in the background, but it does not stare him directly in the eye. Underneath the skull, then we find a cross. The cross with Christ looking directly now at Saint Jerome. Divine intervention. Inspiration for him to finish the translation as quickly as possible. And then we head over to the right-hand side, where we see a candle. This candle not only is not lit, but it is also brand new. This means that his journey has not even started. The candle, the skull, elements of a life over here, it shows us that until his job is done, it's as if he is not allowed to die. If we go even then farther to the right, we find a door frame, as if we are peeking into the world of Saint Jerome. And over here, on this door frame, we find on the bottom right-hand side something quite unique. For the first time ever, Michelangelo Merisi da Caravaggio adds in a coat of arms. The coat of arms bearing the family crest of Fra Ippolito Malaspina, and behind it, the eight-pointed cross, showing everyone that this was a painting done for a noble knight of St. John. When it comes to the rest of the robes being worn by Saint Jerome, which are also illuminated by this fancy and usual light, is all red. The traditional red of Caravaggio, but instead of hanging at the top in the background, now it rests on the bottom of the painting, giving us a more grounded feeling to it. Saint Jerome is wearing cardinal's robes, but where is the hat? If you look to the top left-hand side, hidden in the darkness, you see the mighty cardinal's hat. Something that Saint Jerome would have definitely not been wearing at the time, yet this is a reflection of when it was painted. This is what cardinals looked like at the time of Caravaggio. Saint Jerome, passionately, is doing his job. He is on his way to sainthood as well, and Caravaggio tries to allude to this. In fact, right above Saint Jerome's head, shining and reflecting of the grey hairs, we see a very fine and thin line. A small halo is starting to form. It's not as dominant as we see in other paintings, but this one is telling you that he is a saint in the making. Upon looking at this painting, there is an element of peace. Could this be a moment in the life of Caravaggio where he tries to, let's say, calm down, perhaps see himself as Saint Jerome up for discussion? But what does Caravaggio mean by all of these symbols and the skull, the cross that is technically also hanging slightly off the table? Could it be a hidden message? Was he truly a man on his way to bettering himself now that he could become a member of the Order of the Knights of St. John? Are these the divine methods of his order? Or has his fate shaken him to his core and is now losing touch with his religion? Corner, that's me in the spotlight.
just a dream. That was just a dream. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion. Trying to keep up you. And I don't know if I can do it. Oh no, I've said too much. I haven't said.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back for the closing segment of our episode, episode number 11, where today we delved deep into the detail of Saint Jerome in writing one of my favorites. If I have to be honest, if I had to choose between the beheading of Saint John the Baptist and Saint Jerome, I think I would actually go for Saint Jerome. The reason is certain stories that I see in it in relation to the life of Caravaggio, especially if we look at Saint Jerome as a biblical figure. In the Bible, Saint Jerome is known for having quite the temper, as does Caravaggio in his story. In addition to that, when Saint Jerome, he studies, let's say, all of this theology and the religion itself, he didn't want to become a priest when he was asked. He wanted to remain as a hermit, as he was. Yet, in a way, just like Caravaggio now has his chance to become a knight, perhaps he did not want to become a knight because taking on such vows of knighthood did not line up with the life of Caravaggio. Yet for his work, for his credibility, for his future, he could not deny that, and that is why he would accept this. So do we see here a mirror image of Caravaggio and Saint Jerome? Perhaps, or am I thinking a little bit too much into it? But my dear friends, with that thought, we come to a close of yet another episode. It was honestly an honor for me to tell you all about this magnificent masterpiece. But now, what are we going to do in the next episode? Well, Caravaggio on the islands of Malta has gotten into even more trouble and unfortunately has ended up in prison after assaulting Fra Roero Rodomonte inside the residence of Fra Coppini, the organist of the Church of Saint John the Baptist. And at this point, Caravaggio goes into hiding, is captured by the knights, and allegedly thrown into Fort Saint Angelo as a prisoner. But with this, there are a little bit of grey areas. Would he have truly been imprisoned over there, or at least under watch? How did he manage to escape? How did Caravaggio managed to climb up of this cistern cell, I guess, scale down the fortification walls, get on a small boat or whatever type of boat or ship he would have gotten on in the Grand Harbour, one of the most well-protected and defended areas, and simply sail away off to Syracuse? How did he manage to do this? Well, let's also not forget that the person that would bring Caravaggio to the islands of Malta was none other than Fabrizio Sforza Colonna, the captain of the galleys, who also happened to be his childhood best friend. His mother was the protector of Caravaggio, Madame Costanza Colonna. So definitely there could be some, let's say, mafia or mafiosi stuff at play here, which makes it for an even more interesting story. But with that, my dear friends, we come to a proper close now, because I already did say we're going to close. This episode, we're not closing with a song, because apparently I talk a little bit too much, and so we are out of time. But friends, if you want to get in touch, if you want to leave your comments, tell me about If you like the episodes, what we can improve things, how we can improve things, please do message me on my socials, greg.jeremy, and obviously feel free to get in touch on the station's very own official Facebook page, Campus 103.7. This is Jeremy Greg from Caro Caravaggio, signing out.